I have looked up, you know, frequency lists, for example. I just find these frequency lists to be wrong, you know, because the thing is, frequency lists are made by academics. Academics are old. Old people use different words than young people.
Don't trust the boomers for the frequency list. They don't got it.
They don't read it. So yeah, I agree.
What's up, Kodakera? So welcome back to the podcast. So in this episode, we talked to Ryan Culp, who is a tech entrepreneur turned language learner. He was actually retired and went to Korea to fulfill his goals of becoming a K-pop star. So we talk about sort of life philosophy with entrepreneurship and language learning, as well as his experience going on TV shows and entering the entertainment industry in Korea.
You know what else we should retire? The like button. Demolish that and get that out of there. But what you gotta get in here is following us on Twitter. But hope you guys enjoy the podcast.
But before we begin, we're really excited to tell you guys that this podcast was brought to you by HelloTalk. So if you're not familiar with HelloTalk, it's the world's largest language exchange community with over 35 million users on the platform. So you can basically meet millions of exchange partners and learn about a new language or a new culture. So if you're a part of the Kodakera squad, then you know on the podcast, we often talk about the most efficient ways to reach fluency. And we found that one of the best ways is to talk to native speakers of the language. And if you live in a place where there's not a lot of native speakers or it's harder to meet native speakers, you can just use HelloTalk and you can meet people from the country and learn the language faster.
And of course, you can make lifelong friendships on HelloTalk. The relationships you can make there are so much more. Time and time again, we've talked to people on the podcast who've increased their skill in their target language through connecting with people on HelloTalk. But who knows what's gonna happen? The world awaits you in HelloTalk.
All right, so Ryan, can you give us a quick background of who you are and where you're at today?
My name is Ryan Culp. I'm an American currently living in Seoul, Korea. I've been here a couple years pursuing entertainment and media. But before this, I was actually a tech startup entrepreneur living in New York City and San Francisco for about 8 years.
So how did you get into Korea? What made you do that switch?
I get asked this a lot, especially by Korean people. Why would you come to Korea? Why would you learn Korean? Because a lot of Korean people are busy learning English or trying to move to France or something. But I actually grew up around a lot of Korean people. I played violin and orchestra in the suburbs of Atlanta. So when you put all those variables together, there's just like a lot of Korean people around, and became a little bit familiar with the culture, with the food, with barbecue, with chopsticks through that high school into college experience. And so years later, when I decided I wanted to get into language learning, I wanted to maybe move and live abroad and see what that was like. The two options that came to my mind as an American were Spanish and Mexico, or Korea and Korean. And I wanted the challenge to be a little bit greater than learning Spanish, which to me feels like a bunch of synonyms to English, doesn't really feel like another language. And then I decided to come to Korea.
So at that point, when you like decided to study languages, did you think about it in terms of like building companies using that language, or is it more like you're kind of like retired and now you want to like learn something new?
I considered it as, yeah, basically forcing me to retire, forcing me to start a chapter two of my life. Part of where I got maybe a little bit burned out in tech was that I was staring at a computer all day, and I wanted to do something that would require the use of my brain, but not require, you know, programming or something. And so language learning felt like a good goal to grab onto, because it takes a very, very long time to be good at it. You can learn by building relationships with other people. There's a lot of different ways to learn. So like if you're making an app, you're gonna be using a Gmail and a code editor. If you're learning a language, you might hang out with people, you might watch movies. And I thought that was a really more diverse set of like daily activities I could get involved in. Yeah, getting into language learning was sort of my forcing function to get out of technology. You know, for the first few months, I didn't even touch my computer when I got to Korea, just like iPad, Anki, Cafe. It took me a while to be able to even like crack open that screen and be okay going to my past life activities.
Wait, so how did you like get over to Korea?
I got over here because actually, the company I started, FOMO, we had this referral program where anybody could sign up and basically, you know, bring customers our way for a percent of that revenue. And one of our top referral users was this guy in Korea, Hasok. We had become Twitter online friends since maybe 2016, 2017. I would run the monthly payments through PayPal, right? When you build your referral program, you try to make it sexy to your users, like, click here, get paid. But really it was just me, the founder, going on PayPal every month, writing spreadsheets, calculating how much do we owe everybody. And this guy's name kept popping up, like, Hasok, we owe him more money than most of the other referral users. Who is he? What is he doing? What is he doing well? What can we learn from him? And so I got in touch with him and started to build that relationship that this is a digital marketer. He lives in Seoul. And he sort of casually said, Ryan, if you ever came to Seoul, let's grab a coffee, right? Let's grab a dinner. And we've all been told this and asked this and requested this hundreds of times. This is like how Twitter works in this age. So I kind of didn't think much of it. But a few years later, 2019, 2020, I started traveling around kind of just for fun, traveling all over the place, came to Asia, came to a bunch of Asian countries, and I stopped by Korea. And so I pinged him and like, hey man, you wanna get that coffee? So long story short, during that hangout, he said, you know, by the way, if you ever wanted to live in Korea, I could help you get a visa. Cause that's of course the tough part. You know, everybody wants to move to this place or that place. You might have the money, you might have everything you need, but how do you get this like mysterious visa document? It's a maze, right? Going through government websites, websites that aren't in your native language. But through him, that process was super smooth because his company had kind of hired foreigners before. And so through him, I got a visa to essentially have a full-time job. My title became the CTO of his company at the time. So that's how I got here legally. But the job, of course, my requirements were not like 40 hours a week going to an office in Gangnam, right? Nice. Even though that's where they're located. My requirements were like, build us a couple apps. If you're familiar with this MVP startup lifestyle, you know, you can build an app in like a day or two. So that's kind of what I did. Came to Korea, went hard building an app. And that's, I kind of earned my visa for that like year. And then I spent that year doing other things.
That's actually amazing. So it seems like the best case scenario to move to a country and learn a language.
I got super, super lucky. And I have, you know, several foreigner friends here. You know, their stories are more admirable than mine, actually. But theirs are more typical, right? You come, you teach English. You can come and enter a language school, like at a university that has accreditation. So you go to 4 hours a day of language school. You get a student visa. But those visas are all super limited, right? You can't have like a part-time job. So there's this like class war going on, I think, in your target language country, wherever that is, Japan, Korea, where everybody, you meet another foreigner and they're like, what's your visa? And everyone's like using their visa as a status symbol. So I'm like, B7. They're like, how'd you get that? You know, but that's just how it is. I don't know. Like, I drew the lottery this time.
Looking down, like, people are like, oh, you have that visa? Oh.
Yeah. It's like, oh, sorry, bro. You're at the bar, you're like, just pour one out for you.
It's like a visa fraternity system. Like, oh, you're so
visa racism.
I can't
racism.
Think of a...
Dude, yeah, visa racism.
Yeah. I guess that's the key really to fluency. Like, you start a company, make it successful, and then you get a visa to that country.
I wrote about this sort of unrelated, but I think it's tangential, is like marketing is compound interest. Or I wrote about how the things you want to achieve in life, the inputs don't look like the outputs. So it's like, if you think you want to sit on the beach with a cocktail all day, which a lot of us have had that, you know, fantasy, you actually cannot do anything that looks like beach, sitting, or cocktail to achieve that goal, right? You actually have to do something that looks like sweating, working hard, not sleeping, stressing out. And then the output could be beach, cocktail, lawn chair. And I think like you're getting at now with, you know, okay, you want to move abroad, you want to learn another language, you want to travel, right? Everybody at our age, like, we all want to travel. It's like, well, to do that, you actually have to do some other stuff a lot of times that don't look at all like traveling, that look like squirreling away in an office closet or cubicle or whatever, saving money, whatever your path is. And yeah, so sometimes people say, well, this is a weird path, Ryan, that you went from tech to language or from tech in New York City to Korea. And to me, it's actually more logical. It's like, how else would someone agree to get me a visa in Korea? I had to add value to their life. So I made this app, the guy made money from our app, and then he offered me an in-kind kind of exchange of services, right?
Right. Yeah. It definitely sheds a lot of context to the, oh, I just had one really good coffee with this one random guy.
Yeah, that wouldn't be fair, right? If I could have just said that, and that would be discouraging and unfair. And maybe that happens sometimes. If you get into modeling, if you're particularly good looking, or you can do the blue steel in front of the camera, then yeah, maybe you can have like a meeting and turn that, parlay that into a visa. I'm sure that happens. But for me, it was like, go do something completely different, right? Add value.
Okay, so we have two options here. Go add value, go sweat, get the hard work done, or just be a really good looking model, be able to talk to people and get this down right here. This very specifically, this.
So be French or work.
Okay, All right. No, be French or work. All right, cool. We have an established set right here to get to anywhere you want. So you'd love to see it. I guess very specifically Korea too. But I guess speaking about Korean, you mentioned earlier about methods. And of course, there's so many methods to learning a language. There's almost too many really in this day and age. But what was kind of your mindset when attacking that? I won't say problem, but you can kind of think about it like that, right?
Well, like you just mentioned, I tried to think of it in a specific way as a challenge, because problems are like insurmountable. Challenges have solutions. Even as I learned Korean, I tried to learn the word for like problem, challenge. Which one of these words has the nuance of solvable? Which one of these words has the nuance of stress and I screwed up? I tried to articulate this. I wrote something called On Learning, where I had learned a few years ago to code. And for many years, for the first few years of my career, I didn't think I could learn to code. There's no way I'm smart enough to learn programming, because I had colleagues and I would look at their computer screens and it looked like the Matrix. And I'm like, how does their brain do this? Because I can barely write emails. Before you know it, I learned to code. And it was like this veil just, you know, went away. It was like, oh, that wasn't really that hard. This is all kind of like a joke. When I tried to tackle language learning, which I'm still tackling every day, and I am not as good at language learning as I was at learning programming, for example, but I still try to look at it with the same perspective, which is like, some people think this is easy. I think this is difficult. Therefore, learning equals doing something that's hard until it becomes easy. And like what happens in the middle there is learning. And there's all these methods and strategies. And the way I tried to articulate it is that learning, my strategy of learning is building a conveyor belt to my brain, because I like the concept of an assembly line, of a conveyor belt, of things moving linearly along. You start with the raw material and at the end you have a PlayStation or whatever. Language learning, a lot of these skills that are very complex, they're an interweb of skills, right? In language, you've got your core, like speaking, listening, reading, writing. And then you've also got, you know, sounding natural, pronunciation with some languages, pitch, accent, using natural expressions that actually might not have the correct grammar. So there's all these like micro skills. And when you look at a skill like language, it can be overwhelming because there's no linear path, or it feels that way. You're like, today I can listen to Netflix, but then that means I can't spend that time writing. And so to me, my first theory that I'm still developing is like, if I can make something, a skill that's naturally, innately nonlinear, if I can make that into a linear skill building process, then I'll have a better time, an easier time. I will be less stressed, because that's what I think I did with programming. It's like, there's all these programming languages, there's all these tools and text editors. Where do I get started? Like, just got started with backend scripting language, then moved to this, then moved to JavaScript, and then moved to servers, and then moved to SQL. And by building those blocks in a linear way, even though the skill itself is not linear, it does not want to be linear, it wants to be multi-sensory all at once, you have to sort of carve out that linear path to get through it. So that's been kind of my overall method. What that looks like day to day, I've definitely been a heavy Anki user. You know, if I hear a word, see a word, read a word, I kind of like instinctively have to plug it in to my Anki, even though some of these words are like every day I'll see something or hear something and say to the person next to me, that's the first time I've heard that word. And I learned that word in September 2019. I'll remember the scent and the smell in which cafe I was sitting in when I learned a word, because I might be hearing it for the first time today. So I'm still sort of like getting paid back for a lot of the reps that I've put in, because I've learned a lot of stuff that's not like that top 2,000 words. But the way I think of my Korean learning is that, you know, I think some people, especially if they come to Korea to immerse, they're like, okay, let me get that basic daily conversation, order coffee, no pickles, please, yada, yada. And they learn like 500 words. And this is what they can do. They can have a conversation over here of like, here's what I want on my coffee. I've tried to do this like, here's my whole ocean. Here's my brain. It's this wide. And every day I'm just dripping like a teaspoon of new knowledge into it. So my overall learning level is like, you know, wide but shallow. So I'm just kind of slowly building this well, so that I think one day it's going to kick in where it's like, I'll go straight from talking about politics to talking about astronomy on that same day. Whereas the other learning strategy is like, let's learn how to, I don't know, argue with boyfriend or girlfriend. Let's learn how to talk to bosses. Let's learn how to go to the hair salon. I haven't really wanted to do that. That's not how humans are, right? Like we learn, I think as an actual kid in our native language, we learn kind of a little bit more like this. So it's made my process from the outside seem a little bit slower, but I've had to come to terms with that, you know, I think I'm ultimately building a stronger base for fluency by doing it that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good advantage of adding like adding words you see naturally into Anki. Cause then eventually you only know the words that you care about. Like you don't need to know words that you don't care about, which I feel like a lot of people try to memorize with like pre-made decks.
That's for sure. And I've made that mistake. I've never had a pre-made deck, but I have looked up, you know, frequency lists, for example. I just find these frequency lists to be wrong. You know, because the thing is frequency lists are made by academics. Academics are old. Old people use different words than young people. So that's like the bottom line. It's like you can short circuit that and see very quickly what's wrong with the frequency list on the Korean government linguistic website, which I've downloaded like 6,500 words. You just go, yeah, never seen it, never seen it, never seen it. How can you say this is frequent? But then I go on online forums. There's a website in Korea that's kind of like Reddit where people post about like their relationships and ask for advice. And it's super amazing. Like this is one of my main ways of learning nowadays is I wake up, I'm in the bathroom. All of us do it. You know, you're in the bathroom. You're looking at Instagram Reels. No, I'm reading Natepon, and it's like anonymous Reddit / relationship advice. And people are on there bitching about their husband and wife. Anyway, people, what I've learned, Korean people love, love, love in the written form using bisanga, witteo, like onomatopoeia, you know, those kind of like motion words, because that helps, you know, communicate a feeling, some kind of energy, a vibe when you're writing. And so I'm reading and like everything's fine. And then you see these words where it almost doesn't look like a real word because the sound is like golo golo korida. That doesn't sound. And then you look it up and like only half of that was a real word. But the way they make it into onomatopoeia is like repeat the sound two or three times and then add korida. Like, oh, okay. So I had to learn like 20 or 30 onomatopoeia so that I can understand people's daily emotions and problems they're having with their boyfriend. No frequency list by the Korean government is going to have any of those words. So you definitely always have to like veritas, trust but verify some of these sources. And yeah, I agree with you. Don't use the pre-made decks. And even sometimes the best intentioned, hey, here's a list of words, you're going to have to, you know, do a gut check on them.
I can just imagine you looking at this and you're just like seeing this one relationship. He's like, oh, he hit her with the whoosh and I hit her with the wah. Oh, then she hit me with the boom, you know?
Yeah. Well, particularly when these words are like adverbs, that adverb completely can reverse the meaning. Like, is it a positive nuance? Is it a negative nuance? Just the other day, I was reading something and it had this word, yusan. And I asked somebody about it later because yusan can mean, oh my gosh, now I'm forgetting the better meaning. It has like a normal meaning. And then it also means miscarriage. And I had read the entire post with the other definition in mind. And then I told this person, they were like, oh, it also means miscarriage. And I was like rereading in my brain memories, fragments of that post, like, whoa, everything just changed. So, you know, I still make those kinds of mistakes when you've got homophones, homonyms, and all of these like fun language Easter eggs. But yeah, like another example was, I think one of the first 100 words I learned from a frequency list was priest, like Catholic priest. But there's a lot more Protestant Christians in Korea than Catholics. So like, I don't know, maybe there's more Catholics than Protestants in the world. Like, I have no idea, but I didn't move to Rome. You know, I didn't move to the Vatican to immerse in a target language. So I don't really need to know how to say priest. I also am not Catholic. So I'm not going to address a priest. I'm not going to talk, probably not going to talk to a priest. So I definitely have made mistakes, but it can also be like a party trick when, you know, I think there's a way to make sure you don't feel that you're wasting too much time when you know useless knowledge, but that term, that concept useless, is very relative, right? It's useless today as a 32-year-old who's been learning for 2 years in Seoul. Maybe 4 years from now, I'll have the perfect opportunity to use that word or that phrase, that idiomatic expression, and I'll feel grateful for my past version of Ryan for learning that word. So there's never truly waste. I guess the waste would be if you're trying to do reps when you're distracted looking at Instagram. That's now a waste of time in language learning. But as long as you're learning something, hard to call it really a bad use of your effort.
I can't wait until 36-year-old Ryan comes through at the to do some party tricks at the Catholic Church. Gotta come back on the Korekara podcast to let us know how that goes. But I also think you brought up a good point. Don't trust the boomers for the frequency lists. They don't got it. They don't got it.
They don't text. They don't write on Napalm. They don't Reddit. So yeah, I agree.
That's the baseline right there. If they don't write on Napalm, then they're not a good place to look for language learning. There we go. Established facts right there.
I guess like kind of talking about like what you've been up to in Korea. I remember seeing like your bio. I forgot where, but I think you wrote like entrepreneurship was easy. Now let's try K-pop. So like, yeah. So like, how did that go? Like K-pop.
I've been a musician since I was a kid. I think all of us started in like fifth grade, at least Americans, like with the recorder, the right. fake flute, playing like hot cross buns on the bus and getting kicked off. And then in sixth grade, I started playing violin. Actually became very good. I was first chair violinist for 7 years in middle school and high school. Took a lot of private lessons, competed in a couple state competitions. One semester I was second chair because I was kind of I was an annoying kid. So it was punishment. But otherwise, that was my jam. Like I was one of those kids who would walk around humming, you know, some symphony that we were rehearsing that week. And that got me pretty well versed in music theory, obviously reading music, all of that. And so then as a teenager, you know, wanting to be cool, I started playing guitar, which of course is more practical, regardless of whether it's more cool or not than it is. And I started playing guitar, singing, started some different bands, actually started with screamo bands. Then I got into kind of singer-songwriter, acoustic, pop rock. And throughout that process, even though then I went to college and got a job in technology, I kept writing music. And every year or so, I would record a new like EP, 5 or 6 songs. I'd go fly to my hometown, go to a studio, ship it, tweet about it like twice, play a few shows, and then forget about it. Like I didn't really try to promote it. It was more just a personal expression. I wanted to keep making music and not feel that I betrayed my only natural sort of ability. Because all the tech stuff was just learned through rote repetition. The tech stuff pays, but the music stuff is what I really wanted, right? So when I was getting out of tech a couple years ago, that was what I kind of combined with this like language learning hobby idea. Let's go move to another country. It's like, how can I do language learning and also pursue my childhood dream? Ah, got it. I'll do Korean music. So then I have to learn the language. I get to keep singing. And so when I got to Korea, with the exception of Hasok, my sort of business partner, right, from the FOMO affiliate program, I had no network. And so I got an Instagram account. I made a Craigslist account. I subscribed to alerts, you know, like keywords like male singer, white actor, white model, Midwestern, whatever. And I put in these keywords on Craigslist. You get pinged when a Korean agency says, we need a voice actor. We need someone for a pillow commercial. We need someone for whatever. And I started getting these gigs and I didn't know how to do any of that. Like, I don't know how to model. I don't know how to do voice acting. I just kept getting some gigs and going and doing them and learning. And I don't really want to say fake it till you make it. I'm not actually a fan of that strategy. I don't want to be disingenuous, but I would tell people like, I'm a beginner. This is like my first time, or I've done 3 gigs in the last month. What do you think? When I got the gig, I was, you know, did the best I could. And that helped me build this network. And then after a few months, I had just like a couple hundred followers on Instagram, a few nice photos. I had performed a few shows live, you know, in and around Seoul with my guitar. And next thing you know, I get contacted a few times by these television producers, writers on shows. And like, hey, do you want to come on the show? And the first 1 or 2 times I actually rejected them because, you know, they're talking to me in all Korean. I'd only been studying Korean for like 8 months. I'd been living in Korea for like 4 months. No way. You know, I just thought they're going to find me out. I'm going to be a fraud. I can't do this. I'm not ready yet. Even though this was obviously an awesome opportunity. Well, then I talked to this language learning teacher. He has a podcast in Korean and English where every episode they film it twice, once in Korean, once in English. It's an awesome way to learn. And I mentioned to him over email, kind of my like challenge that like, oh, I'm getting these TV offers, but I'm just not good enough at Korean. And I guess I was expecting him to just sympathize or maybe help give me tips for like learning faster so I could go do those shows. And he was like, Ryan, the secret is nobody speaks that well on these shows. They are actually preferring to find foreigners who kind of screw up. Like they don't want you to be perfect because it makes it funnier for their audience to watch someone battle through, like fumble through their words. It was like, okay, sure, right? Like, just put that in the back of mind. Hey, he's Korean, he's older and wiser than me. He probably knows better. So then literally 5 days later, 6 days later, I get another DM through Instagram. And it was another writer of another big new TV show coming out. She was like, hey, we have a reality cooking show. And that's really all I knew, reality cooking show. Do you want to be on the show? It's like, okay. And I told her like, the Korean's not that great, but okay. So then they brought me in for an interview. That was like my first time going 45 minutes straight only in Korean. It was so stressful. Like at the end of that interview, I mean, I was fun in the interview, I was smiling, but afterwards, my brain felt exhausted as if I had like done math for 20 hours. And then a few weeks later, I got the show and they still kept us in the dark, but it turned out to be this like real Korea's most famous chef. And it was, his name is Baek Jong-won. It was like Baek Jong-won class where he teaches six foreigners how to make traditional Korean dishes. Did like 15 episodes in a season. And then through that again, you know, once you do like one show, I think the opportunities are endless. They just keep coming in. And it wasn't like the most easy thing to do. It wasn't the most fun. It's definitely stressful. So like before each week's episode, I would watch his videos and learn like 100 cooking words, just in case I need to know how to say that I wilted the bok choy. How would I say that? You know, just in case I need to know how to say lightly, you know, sauteed on one side, but wilted the, you know. So I had to really push myself to advance a little bit faster. And I still ended up being, I think, the village idiot on the show. Like I was just the dumbest guy. I was the worst at Korean, but I smiled. You know, I smiled, I laughed. I won one of the episodes. I lost like three or four of the episodes. It was kind of a competition. And again, through that, more opportunities came in and ended up doing a few TV shows, ended up doing a couple singing competitions, ended up getting my own co-host as a co-host radio show for 12, 13 episodes. And after all of that, which is where I'm at now, I kind of just thought like, okay, I've done it. Like I've 80-20'd this country. I've 80-20'd the entertainment scene in this country. I need a bigger challenge. So now I'm going back to the US.
That's a good way to put it. I've 80-20'd this country.
Yeah, that's when you should leave, when you 80-20'd.
It's interesting because just looking at a lot of Korean media, a lot of Korean dramas that I've seen, whenever you see, I guess, the prodigal, I guess, token white guy, if we may, it's always very kind of sculpted to this one persona. You never really see anything outside of that, and it's so consistent. And that's why I feel like, like you mentioned, you always see the same people on the same, on a variety of shows, right?
That's right. And they even, I'm sure you guys watched Squid Game. You had the Middle Eastern guy, right? And he's like the token foreigner. And the way he speaks, like in Korean, there's like four or five levels of formality in your speech. And it basically just means you make the end of the word longer, right? He spoke at like the highest formality. And they kept telling him in a couple moments of the show, they're like, it's okay, speak more casually. And he would keep doing it, you know? And then you notice he's like bowing too much. And it's like, dude, you guys are all getting murdered. And you're speaking like a school child who's afraid to get, you know, so it didn't make sense. And then one of the characters is like, where do you live? You know, says he lives in Yeouido, which is a very central and famous and well-known island in the middle of Seoul. Like everyone has been to Yeouido. People go by Yeouido on their way to work. It's just a normal stop in Seoul. And this guy is like, oh, Yeouido, 어디예요? And he's like, where is that? It's like, dude, what are you talking about? Like, we saw you working in a Seoul factory before you got stolen for the Squid Game. So they just made him super, super ignorant. I mean, they made him like a naive, pure person, like childlike. But the dude's like 30 and he's got a wife and kid, right? Like they show flashbacks. He's got a wife and kid and he's like, where is that? Like, all right, dude. It would be like you film a show in New York City and they pick up a Chinese guy and they're like, Times Square. And he's like, where Times Square? You know, but it's just so ridiculous. But they don't even think that's a big deal when they do this writing. You know, the writing of the token white guys in Squid Game, who are of course the bad guys, right? The international rich elites, of course they're so bad. Not Samsung, whose chairman is actually in prison right now for corruption and fraud, but some random white guy. Their script was so unnatural. And I talked to some people who were on the set and they said, yeah, we tried to help them rewrite the lines, not change the meaning, not change like the storyline, just literally make sentences more natural. And the Korean writers were like, no, you know, because there's this big pride game, right? Where it's like, if you're a bilingual writer on a show, you think you're like the man. You know, a bilingual writer on a Korean show who's never lived outside of Korea is not going to be as good as like an American actor in Korea who speaks Korean. But they don't want to accept the help. They don't want the edits. They don't want the notes. That's very taboo to like give someone feedback. And I learned that with the music industry as well. So yeah, just had to get out. But totally a great, amazing experiences and super grateful. Helped me with learning Korean, helped me with immersion, gave me a reason to study every day. It's like, well, if I don't study today, I'm going to look like even more of an idiot tomorrow. But ultimately now I'm excited to just go back to like studying and learning my own way. You know, I don't want to learn more cooking words. That kind of thing.
I think this is a good point where we know you've gone through all those cooking words, but we know that all the way from all your entrepreneurship journey, all the way through all the jobs you've gone through, all 50 plus jobs that you've worked through, all the time you spent in Korea, all the time you spent in New York and San Francisco before, we know that you've been penning this one message, this one impeccable message that goes and trumps them all. I know you've been on all these TV shows, but on the side, on the set, you're like, oh, what's my Korekara message? So now I can finally put the spotlight on you, Ryan, and this is the time for it. So let's hear it.
네. 그러면 네, 여러분이 그 한국어 배우기 전에 제가 여러분한테 하고 싶은 말은 막상 배우고 나면 딱히 할 말이 없습니다. 감사합니다.
Hey guys, thanks for making it to the end of the podcast. Comment down below if you think you 80-20'd your country yet.
But it's time for our patrons with Cedric, Jimmy, Tracy, Frost, Kevin, Alan, Darren, Drew, Jack, Joey, K, Shiny, Meredith, MKSXN, Polar, Isuzu, Yui, and Sad Boy. Peace.